About 25 years ago, or so in my early 20s, I started attending Europa University in Boulder, Colorado for a master's degree in creative writing. And I really wanted to go to Naropa because back then I was in love with the Beat poets like Allen Ginsberg and Ann Waldman. And they helped found the university. Many of you may know this, but they helped found the university with a Tibetan Buddhist master named Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche, who became a Shodan's teacher. And along with writing, I was really drawn to Naropa because I wanted to study meditation with all the monks and the other Buddhist teachers there. And at the time, I was in my early 20s, I thought that meditation practice was going to kind of be an out-of-body experience. It was going to take me away somewhere other than here in my body, you know, from all of my stuff. I thought it was going to be kind of otherworldly and that it was just going to take me away from myself mainly. And that would be nice. And to my surprise, I was confronted by the wise and very real teachings of Pema Chodron. How many of you know Pema's work? Most of you. Okay, good. And her book titles tell you so much about what she offers, which is taking the leap, the places that scare you, living beautifully with uncertainty, and the wisdom of no escape, among others. And, you know, up until that point in my life, I'd mostly been doing everything I could to escape, you know, by running away from my reality, my problems, and especially myself. I definitely was in no way willing to live beautifully with uncertainty. Is anybody willing to do that right now? Right? Living beautifully with uncertainty. Or face the places that scared me. Actually, totally the opposite, in fact. And so, as a confession, just a few weeks after I started studying at Naropa, I was arrested for drunk driving. I was attending a late-night party with some university grads, and I got arrested. And as with many things that seem like the end of the world as we know it, it actually turned out to be kind of an awakening for me in so many ways. First of all, they took away my car keys, which sounds scary, but it actually, in my early 20s in Boulder, Colorado, if anybody's ever been there, it was just kind of amazing. Really? I get to buy a bike and ride around on my bike all day and get in good shape, and it was really freeing, and I loved it. The other thing that was life-changing in a way was that I was plunked into a series of mandatory AA meetings. And so at the same time that I was getting sober, letting go of one of my biggest escape hatches, strategies, I was also at the same time starting to walk the path of meditation. And what struck me right away was that both my teachers and at Naropa, my meditation teachers, and all the people in AA were kind of telling me a very similar message. They were kind of telling me the same thing, which struck me. And basically, they were saying if I was ever going to find any relief from my suffering or discover any real healing or growth, at some point, I was going to have to stop running and face the truth. And so recently, I came across a quote by the author Cheryl Strayed that so beautifully expressed what I was learning there. She wrote this memoir, Wild. Anybody read Wild or see the movie? Some people? So she wrote this, it was a great movie, I thought. I didn't read the book. She wrote this memoir after courageously facing her own truths by walking the Appalachian Trail. And this is her quote. She says, "Nobody will protect you from your suffering. Nobody will protect you from your suffering. You can't cry it away or eat it away or starve it away or walk it away or punch it away or even therapy it away. It's just there and you have to survive it. You have to endure it. You have to live through it and love it and move on and be better for it and run as far as you can in the direction of your best and happiest dreams across the bridge that was built by your own desire to heal." So in the Pali Canon, truthfulness, or Sakka, S-A-C-C-A, is actually one of what are called the 10 perfections or paramis. And these are qualities of heart that the Buddha taught us were essential to nurture in order to reduce our suffering and create more joy and freedom in our lives. And so we taught that nurturing these 10 qualities would lead us from to liberation from suffering. So Sakha, truthfulness, is one of these. And according to all the old Buddhist stories about the Buddha, which I love, it is said that before he became the Buddha, when he was, you know, he, over many lifetimes, thousands of years of being different people and even animals, he practiced these 10 paramis, okay, before he became liberated. So for thousands of years, the Buddha to be practiced things like generosity, patience, restraint, ethics, wisdom, determination, metta, loving kindness, and equanimity. And yet, while there are many, many stories about how the Buddha to be transgressed and actually didn't practice some of these sometimes, didn't practice patience, he had to learn it, you know. Didn't practice restraint, he had to learn that. His absolute dedication to truthfulness was unwavering, and it is said that he never once lied. So he broke all of these other rules or heart practices, but he never once lied. And this is because, as the teacher Gil Fronsdale says, without a commitment to truth, without a commitment to truth, there is no Buddhist practice. So it's so important that we can safely say, as a kind of absolute truth in Buddhist practice, that deceiving oneself or others is never acceptable. It might also be helpful to remember that sometimes the word dharma is used as a synonym for truth, and dharma practice is synonymous with living a life of truth. It's also important to note that when we're talking about Sakha truth, I want to emphasize that truth is not the same as facts. That's important. Truth is not the same as facts. Facts alone carry no power with them, whereas truth really does. As most of you know, the Buddha was very fierce about asking us to not believe anything he said, which is why I love the Buddhist practice. This practice. He said, don't believe me. He's just pointing the way, right? He said, don't trust anything I say. Look inside yourself for the truth. I'm going to point the way, but you need to look inside yourself for the truth and experience it so that you know it, that yes, that's my truth. Before turning to insight, Vipassana practice, again, my teachers at Naropa were trained in the Shambhala Tibetan tradition of Buddhism. And what they told me was that stepping onto the Buddhist path was like stepping onto a warrior's path, that we're warriors, right? This is because it actually takes tremendous courage to truly stop running and finally face whatever we're running from. And as we all know, this can often feel sometimes terrifying, like we're deciding to stop, turn around, and place our head directly into the mouth of the monster that's been chasing us. So what is it exactly that we don't want to face? What do our monsters look like? So in many ways, what we're running from is always the monster of now. It's always the monster of now. It can be a situation or condition we find ourselves in, the reality of it. This is it. This is the way it is now. This is what's actually happening. We don't want to face that, right? It could be a person or people we find in some way unacceptable. And it can be even ourselves. There's something within ourselves that we find unacceptable and we don't want to look at it or face it. It can also be the monster of our past, which has followed us into the now. Because it's always the monster of now. And this happens often when we haven't yet acknowledged or accepted something that's happened in the past. And so we're in some way letting it continue to chase us. So this might be, for instance, some person or people we haven't been able to forgive. Maybe something that happened. Or maybe it's something we ourselves did, or maybe we think we did, that we haven't yet forgiven ourselves for. Very often the monster can take the form of an old belief about ourselves that we don't want to stop and look at, for a couple reasons, one of which is either too painful. And the other is, we might actually be afraid to let go of it, right? Because even though sometimes it's painful, it's familiar, even if it's not true, and that helps us to feel in some way safe. In all of these cases that I'm talking about, When we're unwilling to face the truth, we're in some way wanting something to be different than it already is. So think about anything you're suffering with right now. Just anything. If you have the top of your head. Isn't there a sense of it shouldn't be like this? Yeah? Shouldn't be like this. Or it should be different. They should be different. Maybe even I should be different. Or it shouldn't have, or they shouldn't have, or I shouldn't have. I've said this in here before, I think, but whenever we can use our practice to catch a should in our minds, right? It's like catching a fly, gotcha. And you see it, there's a should or a shouldn't. It can be really helpful because we can remind ourselves that a should is always toxic. It's always harmful, and it's always a way of avoiding whatever's right here, right now. The phrase I often use to help remember this is, don't should all over yourself. Right? Don't do it. When we're shoulding, we're in essence going to war with what is. And when we do that, we're essentially making the pain of whatever we're experiencing so much more difficult because we're fighting it or avoiding it or trying to cover it over or numb it out, pretend it's not there. It's that old equation of, you know, the amount of pain times the amount of resistance equals suffering. And I know that one so well myself, and I forget it. It's like we got to remind ourselves, this is a practice. It's not a perfection. So it's not that there's not pain. Of course there is. And as we all know, there's a lot of it right now, isn't there? A lot of pain right now. So it's not that there isn't pain. But to the degree that we're resisting it or fighting it, we're going to suffer even more. To quote the musician Leonard Cohen, who sadly passed away this week, if you don't become the ocean, you will be seasick every day. If you don't become the ocean, you will be seasick every day. So I want to stop here just for a moment and say that it's important to understand that facing what feels or seems real at the moment doesn't in any way mean that we are agreeing to it. Super important. For instance, we don't need to agree with a current situation that we don't like or something difficult that's happened, maybe in the past or recently. We do not need to agree with a person or other people's bad or harmful behavior, and we don't need to agree to the negative stories we tell ourselves either. This could be, for instance, a story about how a certain situation is going to turn out. Do we ever really know how anything's going to turn out? Really, truly, can we absolutely know? We might have thoughts about it. But check out how those thoughts are affecting the heart. Okay? They're not in the now, they're in the future. These negative stories can also be, again, the stories and beliefs we tell ourselves about others. Think about that one. What are you saying? What are your stories and beliefs about others that might be causing you stress? And maybe most especially those negative stories we tell ourselves about ourselves, either about how we are or how it's going to be. So what we are facing is the truth of what is. Right now, this is happening, this is it, or this is what happened, or this is what I did or they did, or this is whatever's happening right now. We are facing the truth of right now, this is what it feels like in my body. That's the truth, right? Your body never lies to you, does it, ever, if you really listen to it? The body is so wise. This lies to you all the time, right? The body never lies. So we might acknowledge, we might say, grief is present, or fear is present, anger, blame, feeling of despair is present. That's the truth. We're facing the truth of seeing that right now these are the actual feelings that I'm having, and these are the beliefs or stories or judgments I'm having about the situation or myself or the other person or people. So the first step is always really, this is what I'm really thinking or believing or feeling, you know. We're acknowledging this is it, this is what's here, without automatically needing to judge the thoughts or feelings or fix them or change them. They just are what they are. We're recognizing them and allowing ourselves to simply see the truth of them as they are. So I often like to think about how we work with the mind and heart is how we might work with a child who is afraid that there's a monster under the bed. So the idea is that right now this is his or her reality, his or her truth. There is a belief. There's a belief. There is a monster under the bed. And then there's a resulting feeling in the body, which is fear. Okay. So as a wise and caring parent, do we yell at this little child for believing that there's a monster under the bed? Do we tell them they shouldn't be afraid? Don't be afraid. Did you catch the should? You shouldn't be afraid. Don't be afraid. Right? So the wisest and kindest thing to do at this moment would be to first hold the child with great compassion and care and let them know that it's really okay that they're feeling fear, anger, whatever it is they're feeling. And it's really important that we do this for ourselves in our practice and in our lives. Give ourselves great compassion and care for whatever it is we're experiencing right now in this moment. We might even hear a kind voice that says, "It's okay, honey, I know you're angry, I know you're afraid," or whatever it is. One of my favorite phrases, I think I've shared in here before, is from Sylvia Borstein. It's so simple. She just says, "Sweetie, you're in pain." I just love that one because it's so concise. It's like recognition and compassion in this moment right now. "Sweetie, you're in pain." Then after recognizing and allowing, we might slowly start to help that child to question what they're believing, right? So for instance, we might, after we've given them care, it's okay, you're afraid, I understand, I get it, we can gently take them to look under the bed. Let's take a look under the bed, okay? And we stay with them through this because it's so difficult. And in practice, this is what we do for ourselves. We do not abandon ourselves. We do not yell at ourselves. We don't abandon ourselves. We say, let's take a good look with kindness. So with the help of our own kindness and compassion, we can allow ourselves, if you will, to look under that bed to finally face the monster and see it. And what we might discover is that the monster was, it was an illusion. It was in my mind the whole time. It's a belief that's creating an effect in the body, but it's really not true. It might be an old belief. It might be a current one. One of my teachers, dear teachers, Tara Brach, calls real but not true, which I love. You know? It's like it feels so real, but when we take a closer look at it and examine it, it's not true, but we have to honor that it feels real. This is especially true about our negative beliefs about ourselves, but it can also be true about our expectation about things. Again, for instance, we might believe there will be a certain outcome, and this belief creates suffering within us, even though, again, we really can't be sure about the future. In other cases, when we investigate, we might discover that, wait, whoa, holy crap, there really is a monster under the damn bed, right? There is something frightening under there. And there's some truth in what I've been fearing. Again, it's that famous Thich Nhat Hanh quote, "This is it." Or as one of the great women leaders of our time, Gloria Steinem, said, "The truth will set you free, but first it will piss you off." So if after we've courageously taken a good look at what's here, after we've seen the true unpleasantness of this creature, if you will, we then get to decide, okay, now what? Now what? How am I going to relate or respond to this monster, this pain, this situation, that's going to be the most beneficial, that will bring the less suffering for all? What is going to open my heart even wider here? What's the best thing for everyone? Again, to quote Tara, she so wisely says, "Our attitude in the face of life's challenges determines our suffering or our freedom." Our attitude in the face of life's challenges determines our suffering or our freedom. Very true. If we're honest with ourselves, though, most of the time, we just don't want to look under that bed, do we? We don't want to experience the truth of whatever's happening in the mind, body, and heart in our own lives. If we're truly honest with ourselves, don't we really just want it to go away? Just think about that for a moment. Don't we just really want it to go away a lot of the time? It's helpful to know that it's actually our very natural human tendency to want to fight it, run away, just pretend it's not happening. We also tend to want to judge ourselves for having our thoughts or our feelings in the first place. Or we might even just be resentful that we're, you know, needing to feel whatever we're feeling, that this is what's present. We're also super clever at using all sorts of strategies to try to avoid the truth of what's here right now. And going back to that AA analogy, according to the Buddhist teachings, we're all in a real way addicts. It's just that our substance of choice might be different. So for instance, in order to avoid facing the truth of what's here, we might do things like procrastinate. Or totally ignore something we can't bear to look at. Or maybe we overeat, or drink too much, or pop too many happy pills. We might escape by watching hours and hours of bad TV, or TV in general. We might spend hours on the internet reading articles, posting, commenting on Facebook. And we might get really busy with work, commitments, plans, gotta do this. Which is a way of running. And if we really start to pay attention, we might discover that we actually have endless ways of distracting ourselves and covering it over. I think it's fun to have some humor about your strategies, make it a game. What are my strategies? You know, and how many of them are there? How am I distracting myself? Besides running or covering over, we also tend to use anger as avoidance. Anger can be an avoidance. And one of the biggest ways we do this is by blaming it on someone else or the situation. So it might be helpful to remember that the strategy of blame is almost always an indicator that you're not willing to look at the truth. You're not willing to feel what might be underneath the blame, which is often feelings of grief, anger, shame. So for instance, on a political level, we might want to point fingers and blame others for the change that's happening. We might find ourselves getting totally caught up in a barrage of ongoing blame and anger. When what we really need to do is to stop and face the intense grief and despair, and maybe even the fear of it, the reality of it. When we can stop and really feel it, that's when we can begin to move on and continue with more peace in our hearts. Even if it means that our hearts are going to feel more raw and tender, because they're going to be more open. Because in the end, isn't soft and tender, being that ocean, if you will, the ocean is soft, isn't it? The ocean is not hard. Soft and tender, it always feels so much more real and true than hard. Blame and anger both have the tendency to harden our hearts and blur our vision of the truth. And we can often then become poisoned with hate and blame. Again, the Zen master Thich Nhat Hanh says, you know, when we're filling ourselves with hate and blame, that's what we're practicing. We're practicing. We're cultivating hate in our hearts when we're filling our minds with these things and fueling the anger. When we're caught up in it, what happens is we don't tend to make good rational choices or decisions because we aren't being true to our hearts. We aren't allowing them to be tender and open. It's like that old phrase, don't go to a peace rally angry. Right? It's so hard because there's that energy of anger, but it's an energy. Let it fuel you, but let it open the heart. So the idea is that we can work for peace and change. It's just that when we're doing it with open hearts and with the intention of creating more peace, harmony, or justice, rather than combating hate with hate. as the Buddha so famously taught us, hatred never ceases by hatred. Hatred never ceases by hatred, but by love alone is healed. This is the ancient and eternal truth. So we can practice being true to ourselves through the practice of meditation, and one of the most powerful ways we can do this is through the practice of RAIN, R-A-I-N. And those of you who know this process probably already recognize the first three steps in this talk, right? R, recognize and see that what's happening right now in the mind, body, and heart, this is what's here, recognizing it. The A is for allow. Once we've recognized it, we're allowing the feelings and thoughts to be seen, felt, and held with great kindness. And by the way, the A is, everyone wants to skip the A. We recognize it, and we want to figure it out, and we want to go to the end. The A is where the juice is, okay? And that's what I'm talking about with truth. So recognize, allow, and the I is when we investigate. We take a courageous look under that bed. In this investigation stage, we can ask ourselves things like, what's going on in my heart right now? We can ask, what does this feeling want and need from me? Maybe the feeling needs to be held. Maybe the feeling needs expression. You know, I need to say this. I don't want to hold what I need to say in my heart anymore, because that hurts. You can check that out. Does my feeling need expression? It might. But you're expressing it wisely and kindly, with choice rather than a reaction. Going deeper, we can start to get even more curious and ask the feeling, not the head, the feeling, what am I really believing? What am I believing? And then we can ask, is this really true? And then we can even ask, how is holding on to this affecting the quality of joy or freedom in my life? How is it affecting my joy and freedom? Which brings us to the N of RAIN, which is resting in natural awareness and also nurturing, right? Sense of nurturing, which means that we allow ourselves to finally rest, take a break from our strategies and stop, nurture our hearts, tap into our innate goodness, knowing that we are not that. We are not our stories, our beliefs. We are not our emotions. They are passing through us like a wave passes through the ocean. We are not that. And we rest in the vastness of the ocean. So we are that vast loving awareness that is allowing it all to pass through, which can help us open our hearts and heal and create whatever change might be needed. And just to end here, I'm going to quote Pema Chodron again, who writes, times are difficult globally. Awakening is no longer a luxury or an ideal. It's becoming critical. We don't need to add more depression, more discouragement, or more anger to what's already here. It's becoming essential that we learn how to relate sanely with difficult times. The earth seems to be beseeching us to connect with joy and discover our innermost essence. This is the best way that we can benefit others. So I'm going to end there and just invite you all into one more minute of sitting. And just to invite those of you who would like to place one hand on the heart and one hand on the belly. Breathe into the fingers. Just for a moment, tapping into as best as you can that end part of RAIN, which is resting in natural awareness and nurturing the heart. So the way we nurture the heart is by resting in awareness. becoming that ocean. So just for a moment, seeing if you can rest in whatever's here right now. Your mind, body, heart. Listening to sound. With the intention of allowing whatever's here to be here. No judgment. I'm just listening to these words by Wilkie, who writes, "Quiet friend who has come so far, feel how your breathing makes more space around you. Let this darkness be a bell tower and you the bell. As you ring, what batters you becomes your strength. Move back and forth into the change. What is it like, such intensity of pain? If the drink is bitter, turn yourself to wine. In this uncontainable night, be the mystery at the crossroads of your senses, the meaning discovered there. And if the world has ceased to hear you, say to the silent earth, I flow. To the rushing water speak, I am.